following sermon is read from volume 5 of the 6-volume set entitled Puritan Sermons 1659 to 1689, being the morning exercises at Cripplegate. This complete 6-volume set of Puritan sermons is available from Stillwater Revival Books on Calvinism Bookshelf CD Volume 1 in SWRB's 3-for-1 CD Super Sale at swrb.com. This set is also available from SWRB in printed format at swrb.com. Stillwater's Revival Books makes thousands of classic Puritan books and sermons available, free and at great discounts, in print, audio, and video formats at swrb.com. If you would like to join our email list to stay up to date about all the new, free, and discounted Puritan and Reform resources we make available, please send an email to swrb at swrb.com with the word add in the subject line. For more information about the Puritan Publishing Ministry of SWRB, please email us at swrb@swrb.com. Welcome to a continuation and conclusion of our reading of Sermon 2, entitled God Is, by William Bates. How many miracles of providence do we enjoy in our preservation? How many unseen dangers do we escape? How great are our daily supplies? The provisions we receive do serve not only for necessity, but for delight. Every day we have the provisions of meat and drink, not only to cure hunger and all our thirsts, but to refresh the heart, and to make us cheerful in our work. Every hour is filled up with the bounties of God. Now what shall we render to the Lord for all his benefits? He desires our love. This is the most proper return we can make, for love is an opening and expansive quality, calling forth the heart, a love within which should break forth to close with God's love without, the love of obedience in us, with the love of favour and bounty in him. It is a principle of nature deeply implanted in the hearts of men to return love for love. Nay, the very beasts are not deficient in this. The ox knoweth his owner, and the ass his master's crib. Isaiah 1, verse 3. Those creatures which are of all the most stupid and heavy respect their feeders and express dumb signs of love unto them. How much more should we love God, who spreads our table, fills our cup, and causes his sun to shine and his rain to fall on us? It is an argument of secret atheism in the heart that in the confluence of mercies we enjoy, we do not look up to the author of them, as if common mercies were the effects of chance and not of providence. If a man constantly relieves our wants, we judge it the most barbarous disingenuity not to repay love to him. But God loads us with his benefits every day. His wisdom is always busied to serve his mercy, and his mercy to serve our necessities. But we are insensible and unaffected, and yet the meanest mercy as it comes from God have an excellency stamped upon it. We should upbraid our souls for our coldness to God. Everywhere we encounter sensible demonstrations of his love to us. In every moment of our lives we have some pledges of his goodness. Let us light our torch at this mountain of fire. Let the renewed act of his bounty constrain us to love him. We should love him for his excellency, though we had no benefit by him. Nay, though he hated us, we are bound to love him, as he is truly amiable in himself. How much more when he draws us with the cords of a man with bands of love? Whosoever requites the love of God with hatred, as every impenitent sinner doth, puts off the nature of man and degenerates into a devil. 2. Fear. This is that eternal respect which is due to our Creator, a humble reverence we owe to him, as he is infinitely above us. The holy angels cover their faces when they have the clearest views of his glory. In Isaiah 6:1-3, the Lord is represented as sitting on a throne, high and lifted up, and his train filled the temple. Above it stood the seraphims. Each had 2-6 wings. With twain he covered his face, and with twain he covered his feet, and with twain he did fly. And one cried unto another and said, Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory. The angels are pure and innocent creatures. They fear not his angry justice, but they adore his excellences and perfections. His is a dread when a most serene majesty. Penal fear is inconsistent with the joys of heaven, but the fear of admiration is perfected there, and in this sense the fear of God continues forever. Psalm 19, verse 9. In all our addresses to him, we should compose our spirits by the awful apprehension of that infinite distance which is between God and us. Be not rash with thy mouth, and let not thine heart be hasty to utter anything before God. For God is in heaven, and thou upon earth, therefore let thy words be few. Ecclesiastes 5:2. The greatest distance in nature is but an imperfect discovery how much we are beneath God. It is the effect of grace to represent the divine being and glory so to the soul that in the most social duties it may have impressions of fear. Serve the Lord with fear, and rejoice with trembling. Psalm 2:11. We should fear his greatness and power, in whose hands our life and breath and all our ways are. The fear of God, having its actual force upon the soul, is operative and instrumental to holy walking. From whence the fear of God is taken in Scripture for the whole duty of man, it being an introduction to it. The fear of God and keeping his commandments are joined together. Ecclesiastes 12:13. This is the precedent which governs our actions according to God's will. This is a watchful sentinel against the most pleasant temptations. It kills delight in sin, by which the integrity of most men is lost, for delight cannot dwell with fear. This is the guard and security of the soul in the days of trouble. The fear of God countermines the fear of men. This cuts off base and unworthy complyings. Therefore the Lord brings this as an antidote against the base fear of men. Who art thou, that thou shouldest be afraid of a man that shall die, and of the Son of Man that shall be made as grass, and forgettest the Lord thy Maker, that hast stretched forth the heavens, and laid the foundations of the earth, and hast feared continually every day because of the fury of the oppressor, as if he were ready to destroy? Isaiah 51:12-13. This exalts a Christian above human frailty, and makes him despise the threatenings of the world, whereby many are terrified from their constancy. It is the most unreasonable thing to be cowards to men, and fearless of God. Men have but a finite power, and so they cannot do that hurt they would, and they are under the divine providence, and therefore are disabled from doing that hurt which otherwise they could do. But the power of God is absolute and unconfined. Therefore our Saviour presses with vehemency upon his disciples. Fear not them which kill the body, but are able to kill the soul. Are not able to kill the soul, but rather fear him who is able to destroy both body and soul in hell. Matthew 10:28. He lives forever, and can punish forever. Therefore, in duty and life cannot stand together. He that flies the danger by delivering up his soul exchanges the pain of a moment for the torments of eternity. Austin upbraids the folly of such. They fear the prison, but they fear not hell. They fear temporal torment, but they fear not the pains of unquenchable fire. They fear the first, but not the second death. 3. Dependence. In respect of his all-sufficiency to supply our wants, and omnipotency to secure us from dangers. 1. His all-sufficiency can supply our wants. He is the sun, fountain, and mine of all that is good. From hence the prophet glories in God. Although the fig tree shall not blossom, neither shall fruit be in the vines, the labor of the olive shall fail, and the field shall yield no meat. The flock shall be cut off from the fold, and there shall be no herd in the stalls. Yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will joy in the God of my salvation. Habakkuk 3:17-18. He expresses not only things for delight, as the fruit of the vine and fig tree, but things for necessity, as the meat of the field and flocks of the stall, and the utter failing of these hooked together. For otherwise the want of one might be supplied by the enjoyment of another. Now in the absolute loss of these supports and comforts of life, the prophet saw all things in God. Want of all outward things is infinitely recompensed in the presence of God. The sun needs not the glimmering light of the stars to make day. God, without assistance of the creatures, can make us really happy. In the enjoying of him, we have all things, and that to the greatest advantage. The things of this world deceive our expectations and draw forth our corruptions, but in God we enjoy them more refinedly and more satisfyingly, the dregs of sin and sorrow being removed. By possessing God, there is no burden which we are not able to bear, but he takes it away. Our wants, weaknesses, and sufferings. And there is no excellency of his which we are able to enjoy, but he conveys to us his grace, his glory. There is true riches in his favor, true honor in his approbation, true pleasure in his peace. He is the treasure and triumph of the soul. The Lord is my portion, saith my soul. Therefore will I hope in him. Lamentations 3:24. He is such a portion that all temporal crosses cannot hinder its influence on us, and his influxive presence makes heaven. He is a portion that cannot be lost. He inseparably abides with the soul. The real belief and application of this will keep a saint in a holy independency on earthly things. The flames which shall burn the world cannot touch his portion. He may stand upon its ruins and say, I have lost nothing. Moreover, this will keep the soul upright in the course of obedience, for all the exorbitancies and swervings from the rule proceed from the apprehensions of some particular good in the creature which draws men aside. Those who want the light of faith, which discovers God's all-sufficiency, only admire present and sensible things, and to obtain these they depart from God. But the more eagerly they seek after these temporal good things, the further they run from the fountain of goodness, which alone can sweeten the best things we enjoy and counterbalance their absence. The creatures are but a limited benignity. The necessity of their number proves the meanness of their value. But one God answers all. He is an infinite and indefective good. He is for all the powers of soul and body to hold them in their pleasant exercise and give them rest. He is alone able to impart happiness and to preserve that happiness which he imparts. 2. His omnipotency can secure us from dangers. The creation is a standing monument of his almighty power. For what but omnipotency could out of nothing produce the beautiful fabric of heaven and earth? Man cannot work without materials, but God doth, and that which exalts his power is that he made it by his word. He spake the word, and it was done, saith the psalmist. He commanded, and it stood fast. Psalm 33:9. There went no greater pains to the world's creation than God's command. Moreover, the world is preserved from perishing by the power of its maker. Certainly, without the support of his mighty hand, the world had long before this time relapsed to its primitive nothing. Many instances we have of his power. in those miraculous deliverances which he has shown to his people in their extremity, sometimes by the suspension of the works of nature, his dividing of the Red Sea, and making it a solid wall that the Israelites might have a secure passage. Psalm 78, verse 13. His stopping of the sun in its course, that Joshua might have time to destroy his enemies. Joshua 10, 12 to 14. His suspending of the nature of the fire, that it might not so much as singe the garments of the three Hebrews. Daniel 3, 27. His shutting of the mouth of the devouring lions, and turning Daniel in safety from that dreadful den. Daniel 6, 22. And are not all these, and many others of this kind, not only the pregnant testimonies of his love, but the everlasting characters of his omnipotency? Moreover, that which expresses the power of God with as great a lustre is the turning of the hearts of many cruel enemies from their intended rage to favour his people. Thus did he so change the heart of Esau, who had resolved on the death of his brother, that instead of killing him, he expressed the greatest tenderness and the most endearing affections to him. Genesis 33, verse 4. Thus did he so sway the hearts of the Egyptians toward the oppressed Israelites, that instead of securing them under bondage, they encouraged their departure by enriching them with jewels of silver and of gold. Exodus 12, 35. Now our duty is to glorify this power of God by placing our trust on him. My help cometh from the Lord, who made heaven and earth. He will not suffer thy foot to be moved. Psalm 121, 2 and 3. By dependence on God, the soul is composed in the midst of the most apparent dangers. As the upper region of the air is calm and serene, whatever storms are here below. Thus David expresses the same courage in all estates, when he was retired into a cave to shelter himself from the fury of Saul. He sang the 57th psalm, when he then composed, My heart is fixed, O God, my heart is fixed. I will sing and give praise, verse 7. And afterwards, when he triumphed over Hadadezer, the king of Zobah, he composed the 108th psalm, and sang the same words, O God, my heart is fixed. I will sing and give praise, verse 1. Faith taught him the same song in the cave and on the throne. In all our exigencies we should apply the power of God. The cause of our perplexing fears is our low apprehension of God's power. And therefore, when we are surrounded with difficulties and dangers, then we are surprised with terror and despondency. Whereas when there are visible signs and means to rescue us, we lift up our heads. But our duty is, in the greatest extremities, to glorify his power and to refer ourselves to his goodness. And though we cannot be certain that God will by miracles rescue us from dangers, as he did many of his people in former ages, yet we are sure he will so abate the power and force of the most injurious enemies, as that they shall not conquer the patience nor break the hope of his people. 4. We owe perfect obedience to God's will, namely subjection to his commands and submission to his providence. 1. Subjection to his commands. As he is the first cause, so he is the supreme Lord. He that gave us life must give us law. God hath an absolute title to our service as creator. This made the psalmist desire the knowledge of God's commands in order to his obedience. Thy hands have made me and fashioned me, gave me understanding, that I may learn thy commandments. Psalm 119:73. We may learn this from the universal obedience of all creatures. Those which are without reason, sense, or life invariably observe his commands. Mine hand also hath laid the foundation of the earth, and my right hand hath spanned the heavens. When I call unto them, they stand up together, as prepared to execute his commands. Isaiah 48:13. The insensible parts of the world are so compliant with his will as to contradict their proper natures to serve his glory. Fire descends from heaven at his command. The fluid sea stands up as a solid wall in obedience to him. This upbraids our degeneration and apostasy, that we, who are most indebted to the goodness of our Creator, should prove disloyal and rebellious when the inferior creatures with one consent serve and glorify him. 2. We owe submission to the will of his providence. There is no shadow of exception can be formed against his sovereignty. He may do by right whatever he can do by power, therefore we should acquiesce in his dispensations. This consideration silenced David. I was dumb. I opened not my mouth, because thou didst it. Psalm 39:9. As the presence of a grave person in authority quiets a disordered multitude, so the apprehension of God's supremacy composes our riotous thoughts and passions. And quietness of spirit in trouble springs from the ignorance of God and of ourselves. But impatience we cite God before our tribunal, and do, as it were, usurp his throne. We set up an anti-providence, as if his wisdom should be taught by our folly. And sometimes in afflictions we eye the next cause, but do not look upward to the sovereign disposer of all things. Like Balaam, who struck the ass, but did not see the angel who opposed him. Numbers 22:23. Thus, from a brutish imagination, we regard the visible instrument of our trouble, but consider not the providence of God in all. For whence it is that our spirits are full of unquiet agitations. We live continually upon self-created racks. Now the humble acknowledgement of God's hand, and the submitting of ourselves to his will, as it glorifies God, so it gives ease to us, as there is the greatest equity, so policy, in our willing stooping to him. As I live, saith the Lord, every knee shall bow to me, and every tongue shall confess to God. Romans 14:11. He engages his life and honor for this. If there is not a voluntary, there must be a violent subjection to him. The willful man never wants woe. The spring of our daily misery, as well as our sins, is opposition to God's will. But the cheerful resignation to his providence. What a blessed pill of rest is this to the soul. What a Sabbath from all those sinful and penal disturbances which discompose our spirits. It is a lower heaven, for as in the state of glory there is an unchangeable agreement between the will of the Creator and the creature, so according to the same measure and degree wherein we conform our wills to God's, we proportionately enjoy the holiness and blessedness of that state.
This Reformation audio track is a production of Stillwater's Revival Books. SWRB makes thousands of classic Reformation resources available, free and for sale, in audio, video, and printed formats. Our many free resources, as well as our complete mail order catalog, containing thousands of classic and contemporary Puritan and Reform books, tapes, and videos at great discounts, is on the web at www.swrb.com. We can also be reached by email at swrb@swrb.com, by phone at 780-450-3730, by fax at 780-468-1096, or by mail at 4710-37A Avenue, Edmonton, that's EDMONTON, Alberta, abbreviated capital A, capital B, Canada, T6L3T5. You may also request a free printed catalog. And remember that John Calvin, in defending the Reformation's regulative principle of worship, or what is sometimes called the scriptural law of worship, commenting on the words of God, "which I commanded them not, neither came into my heart," from his commentary on Jeremiah 7:31, writes, "God here cuts off from men every occasion for making evasions, since he condemns by this one phrase, 'I have not commanded them,' whatever the Jews devised. There is then no other argument needed to condemn superstitions than that they are not commanded by God. For when men allow themselves to worship God according to their own fancies, and attend not to his commands, they pervert true religion. And if this principle was adopted by the papists, all those fictitious modes of worship in which they absurdly exercise themselves would fall to the ground. It is indeed a horrible thing for the papists to seek to discharge their duties towards God by performing their own superstitions. There is an immense number of them, as it is well known, and as it manifestly appears. Were they to admit this principle, that we cannot rightly worship God except by obeying his word, they would be delivered from their deep abyss of error. The prophet's words, then, are very important, when he says that God had commanded no such thing, and that it never came to his mind, as though he had said that men assume too much wisdom when they devise what he never required, nay, what he never knew."